Welcome to the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast.
Hey everyone, it's the Oxley Bomb MotoGP podcast, back again between last weekend's awesome French Grand Prix at Le Mans and the week before, hopefully, another awesome Grand Prix at Catalunya, Barcelona. As usual, me, Matt Oxley, former racer, current journalist, and my podcast partner.
Peter Bom, former data recording guy, former crew chief, forever in the paddock. Yeah, that was it.
Right. Hello, everyone. Yeah, so what are we going to talk about this week? Well, we're going to talk about the new MotoGP regulations, and don't turn off because it's not boring. MotoGP is a technical sport, and therefore it relies totally on the technical regulations. You know, if you have good rules, have good technical rules, you'll have good racing. If you have shit technical rules, you'll have shit racing. It's as simple as that. So these new regulations, which come in, it's only 2 years away, 27 they come in. So they're going to be, I think the factories are already going to be testing their new bikes, starting testing kind of somewhere in the latter half of next year, I would imagine. And then they'll have like a full year, because they'll actually start testing these bikes full time in November 2026. So it really isn't that long away. So really important. And the rules were announced at Jerez 2 weeks before Le Mans. So now we've had time for the riders and engineers to give some reaction, and now Peter and I are going to give our opinions about it. And so first of all, we wanted to talk about I'd pay sort of an extra subscriber fee on the Dorna website for that to get some footage of the negotiations, like all the guys in the room, you know, Gigi Deligna, Romano Albeziano, all the Honda guys, and you know, Dorna guy. You can just imagine the fights that they had. I mean, you know, Gigi's going, "Well, you're not going to fucking take away my devices unless I get something off you guys." So, and you know, and this is what would have happened. You know, there would have been a lot of wheeler dealing going on in those rooms, because no one gives away anything for nothing.
Yeah,
Peter?
Yeah, and it's not about the majority. They have to be all together, have to agree about whatever change they're going to do. And to make Ducati agree dropping the right eye devices and changing the aroma,
yeah,
that's not gone for free.
No, for sure. And especially with someone like Gigi, who I think a couple of weeks ago we were basically saying, you know, is the Marc Marquez of the engineering department. You know, he just wants to go out and kill everyone. So he wasn't going to give up anything. I mean, there were sort of rumors that there was talk of possibly introducing a budget cap like Formula One has. You know, Formula One introduced this a few years ago to kind of, you know, just to try and stop the bigger teams spending more, much more than the smaller teams, basically, like in MotoGP, to equalize the grid. And thank God they didn't go for that, because Peter and I are not a fan of budget cuts, are we? Budget caps, are we, Peter?
No, I can't even imagine how they're going to polish that. And obviously, like in Formula One, they didn't very good, because it turned out somebody was quite naughty. And, you know, it's so hard to control.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the area where we need to put a lot of regulations to make the racing better. I think there are bigger fishes to catch.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've always thought with the budget cap, you know, if people can sort of dodge tax, you know, then they can for sure dodge a budget cap where, you know, you can't. How do you keep a tabs on what everybody is spending? I mean, wow.
Nah.
Anyway, let's move on to the first two big things we want to talk about are the devices and the aero, which most fans and most riders as well, in fact, don't like the devices. And you know, even I remember interviewing Luca Marini last year when he was riding a Ducati, and he was like, "I don't like the devices. I want less aero." And that's actually exactly what they've done. So let's talk about the devices first. So first of all, a big hooray for getting rid of those fucking things. You know, we're so glad to see the back of them. I can't wait for it. What do you think about that, Peter?
100%. I'm surprised they didn't earlier do this with on the grounds of safety, especially at the start when the rear is extra low, really on the ground, and the front fork is trapped down and locked in a position that's awkward, and we all start with a crazy low front tire pressure, and now suddenly everybody makes more or less the same start, so you don't arrive with people wheeling at the back and people having the whole shot. Everybody sort of stays where they are, increase crazy in speed, and then have to brake for a, like in Barcelona where we're going to, for a 90 degree half off camber corner. You know, that's asking for trouble. That we are lucky that we didn't have any bigger accidents. But everything is under so much stress. Your position after the first couple of corners is so important because of a lot of other, like especially the aero, other things. And then we allow these shit devices there. So no, get rid of them. I think that's really the nicest thing. Nearly everybody, probably except Pecco, was quite vocal in saying, "Oh, I'm so happy that we get rid of it." You know, riders all love to get rid of it. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't happen often, that nearly everybody agrees, okay, let's stop with that nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that, you know, riders, bike racers like racing motorcycles because they like to race motorcycles. They don't want to, you know, they don't want the engineers racing them for them, which is basically what you get with ride height devices and everything. You're basically doing what the engineer tells you, hit the button at this point and all that kind of stuff. And they want to use their skill because they all think they're the best. You got to, that's the whole point of racing. You think you're the best. And
100%, yeah.
You want to use your skill to get to the first corner first. And I interviewed Danilo Petrucci a few years ago, and he said that getting to the first corner is like playing a musical instrument. You know, you're playing with a clutch, you're playing with a throttle, you're playing with the weight of your body to get the bike to turn right and left because the front wheel's on the ground, so you know you can't steer it with the front wheels in the air, so you can't steer it. So you know that's the way it should be. You know, it should be the rider making the difference. So I think, yeah, 100% great idea. We've been very lucky that we've not had more first corner accidents, really. I mean, again, that comes down to this,
absolute
showing the skill of these guys that they can all charge towards the first corner and be 5 millimeters apart and still get around the corner because they're geniuses, you know. I think that's, yeah. I mean, the biggest one we had last year was in India, wasn't it, when Marini broke a collarbone, didn't he? He collided with his teammate Marco Bezzecchi, and you know, I'm amazed we haven't had more, and you know, we could still have more. That's the thing. You know, in the next two seasons, you know, two and a half seasons. So so we're in total agreement with that. Yep. Fantastic to get rid of them.
One more thing, Matt, that if somebody, Gigi, of course, comes up with a really clever idea, I mean, respect, head off. But not for 4 years in a row.
No.
If you find something that really gives you a bonus over the other riders, then let's have it for 1 year, maximum 2 years. Because if it is something that sort of damages the racing at the same time, if he finds a clever cylinder head that works upside down, inside out, and has 400 horsepower, perfect. You can have it as long as you want until the others find out how to make the same thing. But if it's something like this that influences the quality of the racing, let's get rid of it a lot earlier. That's like a bit of a disappointment from my side in the whole organization, in Dorna and Irta and everything,
I fully agree, and I was going to bring this up later, but let's talk about it now. The thing is, as Peter said earlier, with the MSMA, they have to agree in they have to be unanimous about everything. There's five factories there. If four factories want to, you know, put the front tire in the rear and the rear tire in the front, but the one factory doesn't, then the one factory wins because you won't get unanimity. So which is a crazy way to run a championship, you know. And without doubt, with all the devices and everything, everyone else hated it, but Ducati didn't, you know, and everybody had to go and build their own. But in Formula One, just like Peter said, that if you come up with some sort of like a ride height device or a mass damper or whatever, and the people in charge say, "Well done, awesome, but we don't think this is good for the racing, but you've been very clever, you spent lots of money, you can keep it for the season." But at the end of the season, they sit down and think, "Is this good? Is this good for the racing? Is it bad for the costs?" And if they think it's bad for the racing and bad for the costs, they ban it. And there's no argument. And I really think that MotoGP needs to go down that road. Don't ban something instantly. Say, "Well done, mate, you're a genius, you can keep it for the rest of the year." I mean, in Formula One, you know, the same guy that designed the mass damper and the ride height adjuster for Ducati, Robin Tolui, he created the mass damper for Renault in 2004, 2005, and it was banned at the end of the year after Renault had won the championship. He designed the ride height.
Like all good ideas, yeah.
Yeah, he designed the ride height adjuster for Mercedes in 2014, something like that. Hamilton won the title and it was banned at the end of the year because it was like too expensive, you know, get rid of this shit. So I really think, I kind of hope that somehow, you know, we're allowed to change the rules every 5 years, which is why we have to wait to 2027. I hope that Dorna and maybe Liberty get on top of this, you know, and say, "Look to the factories, you cannot be in charge anymore." Because, which brings us on to the next thing, you know, racing is a show now. It's, you know, 50 years ago, racing was an awful lot about technology, you know, and now it's always about technology. But now it relies on vast amounts of money coming in from guys like you and me and everyone watching the racing, and that basically creates the money. You know, if the racing's shit, no one will watch it. So, you know, it's more of a show than anything. You know, that 10 years ago, I interviewed Pat Simmons, the F1 engineer, and he said, "We don't need to go racing anymore. to develop anything. You can do it all. This was 10 years ago, so God knows what it'd be like now. We don't need to go to racing to develop anything. You can do it all in simulations and on computers. You know, you can learn everything you need to know within reason on computers. The only reason we go racing is for the show. And therefore, the rules should be written for the show. You know, there will always be the technology. But so next, let's get on to aero. The other thing, Downforce Aero hasn't been banned, but they've made some quite important changes, Peter. Run us through that.
Yeah, well, with the aero, I was expecting a bit more, but it comes down basically to 10% reduction in the width of your devices on it, on all your wings, wherever you want to put them. So the whole frame where the whole bike needs to go to be able to go through is a couple of centimeters. I think it's 5 centimeters smaller in total, which is more or less like 10.
Yeah, the upper fairing has to be, it's down from 600 mil to 550 mil width.
So that's like a 10%. And now they're also making the rules that what's behind the ride, there used to be sort of free aero where you can modify every week if you want it. They reduced, first of all, the height which way you can play, which is good for Dani Pedrosa, but because at some point he can't throw his leg over the bike anymore. It's just too high in the rear and there are too many devices on top of the seat. So the seat has to be lower in total. The highest point of the wings on the top of it has to be lower. And it's a simple, now it is a part of the basic aero package, means one upgrade per year. It's no exceptions anymore. But especially bringing it, making it smaller. First of all, I was thinking, 10%, wow, that's not a lot. But it's a whole package of things they do. It's not just a 10%. It also comes down to the most forward point of the fairing has to be 5 centimeters or 50 millimeters more backwards as the most furthest point. This has to make the whole bike a bit more, less sharp. I think if you call it blunt.
Yeah.
And this is bad for aerodynamics. This increases definitely your resistance of your motorbike going through the air. And it also changes the type of wake you leave behind. You probably will make it less violent because everything is more, the dirty air is more or less everywhere instead of just a small stream that's really strong just behind the bike. It's more or less everywhere. So that's already another good thing. And at the same time, we reduce engine capacity. And sorry to bring this up while we speak about aero, but aero and engines are so related. So all we do the last couple of years with all the aero is try to transform a lot of our horsepower into grip. And that's all we do. And that's how we race the motorbikes at the moment. That's what Formula One's doing already for years. And by giving us less power, we have less power extra to play with for aero. That's another thing, because from 1000 to 850 will be, I think KTM said something like 30 to 40 horsepower less they expect to have with a slower engine. That's also not major, but the whole package will definitely help a lot. It's a good step in the good direction. I'm not too keen on the fact that it's immediately fixed for 5 years, because if they overlooked something, we'd be stuck for 5 years again with the guy that finds it out first, probably Gigi, because like you said, in these meetings the only manufacturer that had to give up and not get something back is Ducati. Now, giving something back is not, they're not famous for that in Italy, you know, it's wheeling and dealing. So I'm sort of really, really worried. You wanted to be the fly on the wall there, and I wanted really to know, what did he get? What was promised to him in order to make him agree to give up his best toys and the stuff that make him so happy? So we will find out later.
Yeah. And just talking about the fairing again, I mean, it's not just, like you said, it's not just the width. It's the bringing the fairing nose back, because at the moment the fairing can be, in the old days, the fairing couldn't extend beyond the front wheel axle. And recent, I can't remember when they changed the rules, and they said, it can. And now the fairing is quite, the front of the fairing is quite long. So they can, as Peter was saying, they can run quite a nice sort of 45 degree angle, the front of the fairing. And obviously that creates a lot of downforce. And also, if you take that back, then the fairing has to be more flat. It can't be so angled. So you lose a lot of downforce there. And also it's no longer, it's back behind the front wheel spindle. So the load is no longer being generated right over the center of the tire. So that is quite a big thing. I mean, it sounds like a quite big thing. Peter?
When I hear you talk and I hear you explaining this, something pops up. We need very small riders. If you're a tall rider with MotoGP ambitions, sorry, got bad news for you. There's no place for you on the bike.
Good point. Good point.
That's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we are in North Europe, you tend to be tall and tall and taller every year. that's not going to work on the next generation MotoGP bikes. They will become smaller. That is very, very effective.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. Yeah. So bad news for Luca Marini and anybody else. I mean that is the thing with motorbike racing. It's kind of always worked for little riders. I mean, if you're you know, if you've known a lot of these riders like we have, you know, I mean, Kenny Roberts, tiny. I mean, he's tiny, you know, going all the way back, you know, nearly Steve Baker, tiny, you know, an awful lot of top motorbike racers. Mark Marquez is pretty tiny. You know, they're all pretty, you know, apart from Will Hartog, your fellow Dutchman, Peter, you know, they're all tiny because, you know, it's like in basketball, they're all huge. You know, the demands of the sport, you know, and it's like in marathon running, they're nearly all East African, you know, that's the body type that dominates. Yeah. So every sport has its body type. You know, rugby players don't tend to be thin and light, do they? You know, they tend to be pretty muscly. So, I mean, yeah, I think you're right. It will definitely have an effect there on taller riders. Let's go back to engines. 850cc's. Everyone's terrified that if you're old like us, you'll remember the 800s, which were around from 2007 to 2011. They were introduced in 2007 because everybody said the 990s, which arrived in 2002, were too fast. They were making about 250 horsepower, if that, at the time. So they were too fast. So they got rid of the 990s, replaced them with the 800s, and the racing became very boring. It was follow my leader stuff. It was hard to overtake, and we had some horribly boring racing. I can remember by 2012, I nearly gave up being a journalist. I just thought, what's the point? You know, the racing is often really quite boring. Not always, but often. I think the first last lap overtake in the 800 era was Barcelona 2009, when Valentino Rossi famously overtook Jorge Lorenzo on the last corner. That was the 2.5 seasons of 800s before they had a last lap overtake. So, you know, a lot of people say, oh no, we're going to go back to the 800s. But you don't think that's going to happen, do you, Peter? So why do you think that?
Oh, I hated that period just as much as you. I don't think I watched it a lot. Everything was more exciting than watching MotoGP at that time. But what most people forget is the tires we were using at the time. I think it was probably more down to the tires than anything else.
Yeah.
The 800s, in a way, they were actually beautiful racing motorbikes. It's like a fucking fast 250. It was agile and narrow. Really, really fast, needs to be really like a 250. You just take a knee out, you don't hang off and anything. So it was like pure, simple racing. But the way that, I think the reason that they become obvious, that they quite boring, is the front tire. That was, it's hard to say that was just too good. That front tire was un-fucking-leavable good. You could get away with murder with that front tire. Not with the rear by the end. So everybody was still on ice and quite careful with these bikes, but not on corner entry. So I think it was a lot down to this unbelievable Bridgestone front tire that they had at that time. And now I could hear some experts, some riders, some ex-riders explaining they're a little bit worried with 850s because now we lose torque. We have to do the horsepower that we need by revving the tits of it. I'm not sure if that's okay. Yeah, we will definitely will have it revving. Sure, sure, sure. But nowadays, the motors are so, the engine, the power unit is used in quite a different way. It used to be a carburetor or an injector. You open the throttle and you were just waiting for the power to come and you feel the power band and you needed to use and almost serve that power band through the gears. Nowadays, it's more like inside the ECU is a total three-dimensional model of this engine power, of its output, like RPM and throttle position and power you can plot in different ways and invert it and so on, upside down, inside out. And in the end, what happens now with most modern sports bikes even is if the rider opens at some point the throttle 5% more, the ECU recognizes that, okay, you want 5% more torque. The ECU doesn't think in horsepower. It just says, you open 5% more, you want 5% more torque. I'm going to give you 5% more torque. And sometimes that means opening the butterflies 3, 4, 5%. Sometimes that means opening the butterflies 12% because there's like a dip in the power graph, changing with the injection or with the ignition. But the result has to be a smooth transition for an extra 5%. 25% of whatever there is. So only when you run out of steam, it's going to be a little bit of a problem. That at the moment is really, really late, like the end of fourth gear. That's when there is no wheelie device active anymore. That's more or less where stuff really happens and becomes a horsepower race. Okay, that will change. It will probably be a little bit earlier. But having less aero means also we're using the engine in a different way. So it's too early to say, but I'm not too worried we're going to end up with peaky engines that will be so hard to do. Hopefully, actually not, because at the same time, they reduce the amount of gears that you can use for the gearbox. So the amount of first gear, second gear, third, it was used to be almost unlimited. Now they put a cap on it, like how many first gears, how many second gears, lots of primaries and unlimited secondary gears. So whatever your engine model is, you get away with it. You have less options than you used to have. You have a little bit less power than you used to have. So I actually like it, because it becomes, again, a little bit more important how you set up your whole engine.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've reduced pairs of gears by a third, which is, there were already limits. I think they introduced limits on the amount of gears available some years ago, but they've reduced it by a third. So therefore, that forces the engine designers to design engines with a bigger spread of power. Because otherwise, you know, if you've got a wider gap between the gears, you know, you can't have a peaky engine, because you change gear and it'll just, the RPM will fall back into the dead zone and you're stuck. So, you know, if you've got a big spread between gears, you need to design an engine with torque. Well, you have to, otherwise you're not going to go anywhere. So that's going to be quite interesting. Just going back to the 800s, and you said, you know, that it wasn't the 800 specifically, it was the front tire, and just wanted to add a little bit more to that. Yeah, it was massively grippy, the Bridgestone front, which was, it wasn't the spec tire in 2007-2008, but it won in 2007-2008. Valentino Rossi, after one season racing Casey Stoner on the Bridgestones, he was like, whoa, okay, I need Bridgestones, and off he went. And that was the kind of beginning of the shift towards Bridgestone being the spec tire supplier in 2009. So the front Bridgestone had amazing grip. You know, Alicia Spargo used to talk about, you could go into the corner with so much brake that the front tire was locking, and you got it, the front, your knee down and everything, and it was fine. But there was another thing about the Bridgestone front, that it needed a lot of load on it to keep working. So
exactly,
you had to take a very specific line around the corner to keep it loaded. If you didn't keep it loaded, it would stop gripping. So that became, the motorbikes became one line motorbikes going into the corners. And then because of the peakiness, they kind of, you needed to carry a lot of corner speed and everything. And so they became like 250s, but it was hard to overtake because you couldn't square off the corners anymore. Because if you square off a corner, you're not maintaining
fully right
a constant load on the front. Because you square, dive out to the corner, loads of load on the front, flip the bike on its side. And as soon as you do that, the load comes off the front. You couldn't do that with the Bridgestone. Really, you really needed to use one cornering line, and if you've only got one cornering line, it's very difficult to overtake.
Yeah, 100%. I remember Stefan Bradler leaving us in the Moto2 to go to LCR Honda, and he came back quite often to us. I remember he told us in Barcelona in the first year, he said, "I'm going into most of the corners, and I'm on the limit of the front tire, and I'm way too slow. I feel the front tire going away from me. Come back to the box, and they say, 'No, you're just too slow.
Yeah.
You have to brake later and keep more brake pressure.'" But he said, but the tire is already going. Yeah, that's because you're too slow. And so he picked that up more or less, you know, because he hates crashing, so he's either slow or you pick it up. But yeah, it wasn't good for racing. If you dive it underneath somebody, then suddenly you unload it too quickly, and then it's gone. So that was like a bad thing for the racing, because that rear tire needed to be really babied around for the first one or two laps to get completely up to temperature. Otherwise, it will send you to the moon and you never come back. So that was like a situation, these tires. I know that I heard from people that the front tire was basically always the same all year long. Whatever we go to Sachsenring in the rain, or we are in Barcelona at 40 degrees, there's just one front tire and it behaves always the same. Now, that is a difference with Michelin at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Some stuff has changed a lot.
Well, I've always said, I mean, in 2007 or something, a Michelin was stolen from a paddock, a Michelin rear, because obviously the Michelin rear has always been brilliant.
That's a thing of beauty, yeah.
And I've always thought that Michelin should go and go to Le Mans 24 Hour and steal a Bridgestone front, you know, from the Bridgestone trucks. But anyway, we're getting sidelined. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's less fuel and it's 100 non-percent refinement fuel. I remember when, you know, which will also have sort of effects on the power they can make. I remember when, I think when we went back to thousands in 2012, I can remember King Kenny Roberts said, Jr. saying, sorry, Kenny Roberts Jr., not his dad, the King, saying that stuff thousands, we want 1200s. You know, Peter mentioned it a minute ago. What you want for good racing
with crappy tires
is lots of torque. And if you want even better racing, you want lots of torque with shit tires, well, shit rear tires. So everybody's coming out of the corner sideways, smoking the tire, you know, a little bit. And what do you think about that, Peter? About having, I mean, torque is so important, isn't it? Because it allows you to do different things, put your bike in different places.
Absolutely. First of all, one more thing about the engines coming back there. It's going to be a tech race again. Like you said, you have 850, you've got less primaries, you're 100% the fuel difference. And at the same time, we're having less fuel. We have, you know, the tank capacity has to be reduced for the races. These things all together mean that not far from now, they were running engines and doing simulations with stuff. Because if you don't have that properly sorted, you'll be punished. And at the moment, let's for the moment forget about Yamaha, then everybody has power enough. It's just how to use the power. We're all having power all race long. We don't running out of fuel like Aprilia used to do in the beginning when they, I think 5 years ago when Aprilia just found some proper speed, then they were using way too much fuel as well in some of the fuel consumption tracks. Not anymore. Everybody is on a really high level, but everybody has to go, you know, back to square one now with these engines and with this fuel and less fuel capacity. So that's going to be interesting. For a show point of view, it might be sort of sad, because if some manufacturer really misses it, he's missing it for probably the whole year. But yeah, like you said, it still is a technical sport. Otherwise, you should basically give everybody the same bike. So you have to allow the manufacturers to compete and show what they can this thing. But you asked me about torque, you said?
Yeah. And why is it important?
Well, yeah, torque is easier to use than horsepower. Horsepower, we usually think about the end of the rev range where all the power is. And if only there is all the power, that's quite hard to use. So with torque, we usually mean, we usually mean that there is a proper mid-range that without any hiccups goes over to an end shot. That's really, really nice. Like I said earlier, the engines now are having a really flat power delivery. There is not a torque wave that you can serve for a certain amount of time and then switch in time to the next gear and surf it again. You open 10% more, you get 10% more torque until it really runs completely out of steam.
I remember interviewing the famous engineer Tom O'Kane back in 2002 when Honda arrived with the RC211V, the 5-cylinder 990, which just kind of destroyed everyone. And he said, you know, basically what you're after with a racing motorcycle engine is a pretty much flat torque curve. If you've got a flat torque curve and the rear tire spins out, you know, under power, all you do is just gently close the throttle and the thing will just basically come back into line. And that's kind of what the RC 211V did, the 990. If we all remember that, if we were watching at the time, that thing, you could ride it as sideways as you want and it was just completely friendly. So the flatter your torque curve, the more friendly the bike is. And the more friendly the bike is, the more you can do with it. You know, you can make up your own riding style. You don't have to ride the bike the way it wants to be ridden. You can actually ride the way you want to be ridden. Which brings us on to tires, Peter.
Yeah, well, we're going slower. That's the good and the bad news. We're going slower in a way that I like because we get rid of a lot of devices. Now, MotoGP is like, what do you say, the pinnacle? We are on top of everything. So our lap times is the target for the rest of the world, for superbikes, for Moto2, for everything. So everybody has to slow down a little bit. And there is no better way almost if you want to slow down a series than the tires. We're having spec tires that sort of reduces the urge to quickly all the time bring better tires, but you know, the superbikes getting close over one lap, they can get close. Not in reality. In reality, they're having shorter races and they're having lots of fuel to play with. So if you give them the race distance and the fuel from a MotoGP, that will be a little bit of a different story. But I think they have to slow down, first of all, superbikes as well, more or less at the same time.
Oh, 100%.
And I'm curious how they're going to do that.
Well, there's talk that Superbike will switch to superstock regulations, which is obviously much more standard. That, you know, with a superbike you can pretty much do anything except change the engine and the frame, whereas superstock, you know, you're very limited to what you can do to the bike. So it's a lot cheaper for a start. You know, one of the negatives about superstock is that whoever's got the latest bike is usually, not always, but the latest bike is usually better than the previous ones, because why would you design a new bike unless it was going to be you better than the other ones. So, you know, you end up, if you do Superstock, you end up with kind of mono brand racing. The latest bike wins everything. But World Superbike already has a system of dealing with that, with RPM limits and weight limits and so on. And it's big, Superbikes is basically like NASCAR now. You know, if somebody's running away with a championship, they can change the rules midway through the season and say, right, we're taking 500 RPM from you, or you've got to run another 5 kilos or another 10 kilos. So Superbike has that system in place. So it can go to Superstock, and it has to, because you can't have the touring cars faster than Formula One, you know, and Superbikes are basically touring cars.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
So, yeah. Peter?
What is interesting that they are going to do, they are testing fuel flow sensors on all Superbikes at the moment, and next year there will be a fuel flow limitation, which okay. I think is an interesting thing to do. And it really gives Superbikes another place in the world, something special, but it has definitely a good reason. It has a sense. Because the difference between having a maximum fuel capacity or fuel flow is that with maximum fuel capacity, you can play when you use all your power and when you don't. With fuel flow restriction, you can't. That's just, this is the amount of fuel that you can play with. And if you extract more for your engine, if you want to do that with the same fuel as your competition, you have to be smarter. You have to design, you have to use better materials, a better cylinder head designs and whatever, you know?
Combustion, yeah.
So you're working on something that is still relevant to make the engine like really, really effective with the same amount of fuel. You can do that now everybody is crying and saying, that's useless, that's senseless, nothing works. But that's usually every time you change somebody's playground, they will first cry, and then later they will find out, there are actually some interesting points in it, and we're back to racing again. So yeah, the fuel flow is a thing that I like, that probably is really good in superbikes. The other thing I want to say is, well, we never spoke so much about superbikes, and now I'm going to speak about supersport.
Well, steady on.
This is a MotoGP podcast, sorry people. But when you reduce MotoGP speed and lap times, you have to do something with the other classes. Now, this should be possible because Dorna owns everything, so that shouldn't be too complicated. What they did with supersport, and they call it next generation, to stop making it a Yamaha R6 Cup only, is allowing more or less every bike. I mean, there is Ducati's 900 something two cylinders in it, and having a quite clever equalizing system in place. They run a lot of tests with them on dynos and so on. They even measure acceleration forces and top speeds on all of the bikes all the time. And then not just cutting RPM, but also, I mean, the big Ducati engines, they're running on probably 70-75% maximum throttle opening at some points.
Wow.
Just to make them more or less equal or not too far away from Yamaha R6. The poor Yamaha is around for ages, so that's the benchmark on how low you must stay, more or less, because that's already tuned completely and can't get any faster. So it's called Supersport, not longer 600. So you can bring more or less every bike. Next year KTM will be in Supersport next generation with a two-cylinder bike, just because they have a clever ECU that they control over firmware with throttle opening and RPM, probably even ignition, to give it an outcome of the power that is different, but should be in total more or less similar. That's a very good, has proven a good way, because now we have Triumphs, MV Agustas, everybody can win at the moment in Supersport, almost that's except Yamaha. So that's also a way to work at for the Superbikes. The interesting thing, to get back to the basic, why we talk about, is if MotoGP slows down, all the others also have to slow down a little bit.
I mean, the weird thing is that for a long, long, long time, World Superbike bikes can use a lot more fuel than MotoGP bikes. The World Superbike maximum fuel tank size is several liters bigger than the MotoGP, and the races are shorter. So I think it's something like they get to,
for a shorter race,
they get something like basically 24% more fuel than MotoGP bikes, which is just really weird. You know, road bikes having more fuel to burn than race bikes. But anyway, we started talking about tires and we got distracted. You know, that is the best thing. That's the best way to slow down a racing vehicle, two wheels or four wheels, is give it less grip.
100%.
You know, racing is all about grip. It's basically about nothing else, really. You know, drag racing is about going in a straight line. You know, circuit racing is about going around corners, and going around corners is all to do with grip. All to do with grip. So that if you want to slow down the bikes, and the way you really want to slow down the bikes isn't on the straight so much, you know, okay, so they're doing 226 miles an hour. Yeah, that's too fast, so we need to make them slower. But where do the accidents happen? They happen in bloody corners, not on the straights. So what you want to do is slow down the bike through the corners if you want to make make them safer. And all, particularly because we're already running out of runoff. All the good circuits, the fast circuits, the old school circuits, which we already love, Mugello, Phillip Island, places like that, they're all running out of runoff area because the bikes are going so fast around the corners. And so when they crash, you know, you end up nearly in the barrier. So, you know, if they don't make the bike slower through the corners, we're going to have to lose races like Mugello and Phillip Island. No one wants to do that. So I was amazed that there was no talk about tyres in this general sort of rules chat in the last few months before they were announced. And in Qatar at the race, I went up to speak to Piero Taramasso, you know, the Michelin MotoGP boss, and said, have Dorna come to you and asked you about creating tyres with less ultimate grip? And he was like, no. I was like, what? You are joking me. I mean, that's the cheapest, easiest, most effective way to reduce lap times is with tires. It doesn't cost anything, basically. You just say to Michelin, all right, we want to, you know, you can actually even do it by changing wheel rims. If you designate narrower wheel rims, you will have less rubber on the ground because the tires kind of pulled around more by the narrower wheel rims. So you've got less grip. I mean, it's so easy to do. And they haven't thought about it or haven't spoken to Michelin, which I just find mind-boggling. So, but Taramasso said, yeah, we'll do that. Because when you change all the rules, it's not like, well, they're going 2-3 seconds a lap slower, which is what they reckon it's going to be because of Michelin. It's because of the whole raft of rules. So that would be the perfect time to do it. And if you design a tire with slightly less extreme grip, you can generally give it a more manageable grip, you know, more feel, which again, it's like giving an engine more torque. You give the tire more feel. I mean, remember when Schwantz and Rainey in 1991 were on Dunlops, anybody else listening is really old like us, you know, you will remember that year as very special because they were just sideways everywhere. They were going about the same speed, but they were sideways everywhere. They weren't going any faster, really, well, a little bit, you know, half a second faster, but they were sideways everywhere, which was just wonderful to watch. And that's what, to me, you know, more torque, less grip, away you go. Peter?
100%. No, Piero definitely didn't got the memo for worse tires because he did a lot of work last winter and he came up with tires that were a lot better, but behave also different when they grip. And suddenly there is how you call it? It's not a chatter, but the vibration problem coming from Ducati, going to KTM and whoever is next.
Yeah. And the lap time's getting faster, which is...
That's part of the problem there.
Lap times is getting faster is great, but like we say, we do not want to lose Mugello, Phillip Island and just end up going to all 20 tracks of go-kart circuits. I just, you know, I will walk away at that point because I look forward to the great circuits. You know, you go to places like Valencia, it's all right. You go to, you know, the places I like are Mugello, Phillip Island, Silverstone, the fast old school tracks, you know, which do, and also Sachsenring. I love the faster section of Sachsenring. And even that is getting quite iffy on runoff in a few places, you know. So, you know, they really need to do something about corner speed, and the best way to reduce corner speed is create tires with less grip. You know, they can just specify a narrower width or whatever, or just say to Michelin, do something about it, you know. So I was gobsmacked at that. What else have we got to talk about? We talked about tires, we talked about fuel. What else have we got to talk about, Peter?
There is the spectacular idea of GPS data that's going to be shared in between the teams and probably to Estefan's as well. I mean, that's a shocker.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming. Yeah. You've
lost all your, suddenly everyone's lost their secrets, haven't they? You've got to, all the other teams can see what you're up to.
Well, maybe less than we think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, somebody said that all the factories have video guys out on the track. They all have them now. They've had them for some years. So they video every bike coming past and they slow it down. They slow-mo. They run one bike over the top of another when they run it and they see where the other people are getting advantage, how they're getting an advantage. So the GPS probably won't make a lot of difference. They're also using it for safety with a collaboration with Padua University. But so they can measure the speed. Dorna can measure the speed and see how far the bikes travel when they crash, so they can learn, you know, more about track safety. But the cool thing will be if the fans get it, which I'm not sure about, but hopefully if they're going to give it to the teams, they might as well give it to the fans as well, mightn't they? Which will be cool.
Yeah, after the session, the teams have access to each other's data, and I don't think that's going to be real data. It's just the GPS speed everywhere on the track that motorbike had in is probably his own fastest lap. Sounds shocking. I was shocked with it, but thinking more and more about it, riders usually know where they lose and where they win on their bike, where the other bikes are faster. And like you said, the video camera guys are everywhere as well. So it's probably less than a secret than we think it is. That's the whole idea. If one bike doesn't stop effectively, can't stop in short time, then the riders know that.
Yeah.
And they know, oh, the Ducati, that bike can stop. That's unbelievable. So they know that already. And then probably we will just see it in the data.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit surprised and looking forward to, because the memo said the teams will have it after the session and also at some point for the fans or something. So anyway, we see.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to give it to all the teams, why wouldn't you give it to the fans? It's just something else for people to get their teeth into, isn't it? Which is what you want. Just talking about how riders know about what the other bikes are doing, that's a thing I've always found fascinating. You know, they know everything. You know, the guy in front is, I followed him for that long, and he changed gear 2 meters. On the third lap, I was behind him. He changed gear out of turn 5 3 meters before than he normally did, and this did that, and so on. And, you know, they know intimately how all the other bikes work, Peter.
100%. And because I worked with a lot of riders in my life, and I learned that the clever riders, they know. But you need to be sort of clever, because it's not only you need to have an attention span that you need to have some data channels ready to record other stuff than you're already doing and you're quite busy. It also needs sort of an overview of how the racing is, because it's so, what I found, that the less clever riders, they always tend to make the same type of mistake, which is understandable, but at the same time annoying. They don't really get the harmonica effect. So if a faster rider passes them and starts to brake and they brake, they will still run into the back of him in the braking area. Because if you're following somebody on half a second and you go braking, then suddenly that half a second was in the beginning 20 meters. And when you come to the apex, it's 3 meters. So you know one thing for sure, I'm good at the brakes. All my riders were always saying, I'm good at the brakes. But the other bikes, man, when he opens the throttle, he just blast away in no, it's not like that. You know, if you follow somebody around the track all the time in half a second, the distance will change all the time. Yeah. And it's the clever riders that understand that they understand I'm on the limit on the braking, he's on the limit on the braking, but he definitely stops the whole bike better and more effectively than me. It's so easy to say on acceleration I'm losing from him, like I said. But some riders, I had riders that came in that could tell us that there were problems with the traction control from another bike because it was cutting way too much in that gear and in that corner.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I didn't need to hear that. I was just thinking, okay, you have a lot of extra attention while you're already on the limit on your bike. So,
and that's what
these are usually the special
guys. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
They pick
that's
up.
What it's all about. And I believe also the other thing with the GPS is that you'll be able to see the position as well. So it depends how accurate this GPS is. I mean, I'm told that the most accurate GPS can be within a centimeter. So riders will be able to study each other's lines. But again, as we've already said, you know, they all know, Marc Marquez squares that corner off more, or he goes out a little bit wider there. You know, they all know that. But again, for the fans, it'll be so cool to be able to see that, to see all the different lines that people take and so on. You know, it's just more stuff to talk about. You know, it'd be great for TV commentators, because TV commentators are desperate for stuff to talk about.
I'm not sure. I will be surprised if it also gives the exact information where the bike is on the track.
Okay.
But I know that Corrado was telling me in an interview, Giacchinelli, that they are working on a safety system, on an alarm system, that not only includes if a bike was crashed, but also if it's still on the track, if it's in the gravel trap, and where it is.
Right.
Because they are sort of wanting to crash, to create this danger zone. If a rider crashes just after a certain blind corner or whatever, then they want to have a sort of automatic system that makes all the dashes go red for the bikes that enter that area. And then they need to know not only if he crashed, but also where he is.
Yeah.
And for that, you need
GPS.
More or less within 1 meter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And GPS can do that quite good at the moment. I know 2D is probably supplying that sensor, because they worked with 2D already for over a year to do this sort of measurement on certain bikes during the season to see how accurate it really is in total. Because as easy as it sounds, in the end, measuring with GPS with a good accuracy is not so easy. There's a lot more to it than just, I'm here on the earth, I'm there on the earth, and this was the time, then this is my speed. There's a little bit more to it than just that, but they're working on
it. How hard can it be? Google Maps works. How hard can it be, Peter? No, I'm joking. I think we've probably, have we covered everything? I think we've covered everything. We've been done 48 minutes. Yeah. I think we must have. People will be going to sleep. Is anybody out there? Are you still listening to us? I think we're done, I think, aren't we? And in which case, I just want to remind everybody about our our website. If you want to support us, throw some money at us, £3.50 a month, dirt cheap. You know, you get four pods for a half a pint of beer. Just think of it in that sort of from that point of view. And lots of podcasts we have got for extra for the people that pay on Patreon. We've got Casey Stoner on there. We've got a new one with Jeremy Burgess coming up, talking about what Rossi was like over his 13 years together, seven titles together. We've got Jack and Ruby Miller on there, which I really enjoyed doing. We've got Kevin Schwantz on there talking about mastering 500s. Lots of really cool stuff that you can only get by throwing some money at us. So please do it, Peter.
Yeah, oxley.com.com is the one. No, the one that we just put up today, that Sam, our highly paid producer, just told me he's going to do. That's the one that I did an interview with Marco Pastor from Dainese in Portimao about his letters. And it turned out to be really interesting. I was expecting like, okay, this is going to be a PR talk. Let's see. But of course, it is a bit of a PR talk. But he explained a lot interesting sort of behind the scene facts, what goes into these letters, how many letters a rider has, how many times they repair it, how many times they have to change it because of arm pump. Very basic, simple, sort of stupid questions that I asked him that he really said, okay, yeah, this is sometimes a problem. For example, you're in Portimao, your rider is on the podium, there is champagne everywhere, but half an hour later, that chute has to be in the back, going in the plane, and 1.5 week later, we see it in whatever the other side of the world. That's not going to make your chute a lot better. So no. How are you going to deal with that? So a lot of funny things he spoke about.
Well, I was about to say one of the nastiest smells in the world is the smell of hot sweaty leathers with champagne on them. You just have the combination of the leather smell, the champagne and sweat is just, you just want to vomit when you smell
bad.
It. You know, it's really bad. So I'm glad when they have the post-race debriefs and everything, riders have normally got out their leathers because it really stinks. There was one other thing I wanted to say, which I've forgotten. Peter, you go on.
No, I think I would just want to point to people that we have on you know, for our supporters, the extra content that's going to be up this week now is the one with the Dainese guys explaining all the ins and outs about the leathers and how they support them, how they service them.
I've remembered what I was...
Yeah, other than that, I'm already really looking forward to Barcelona next week.
Me
really,
too.
Really looking forward. That track that delivers always in drama and whatever.
Yeah, proper racetrack.
Whatever, something always happens there, so look forward to it.
What I was going to say was that, you know, all the sort of behind-the-scenes stuff with leather makers and so on, like every leather company has a woman or a man sat in a little, in a truck or whatever with a sewing machine, you know, and you occasionally walk past the Dainese truck or the Alpine Stars truck or the Ixon truck or whatever, and there's somebody in there beavering away, fixing, you know, taking a destroyed panel out of somebody's leathers and fitting a new panel. So, you know, there's all kind of stuff that goes on behind the scenes in MotoGP that most people never see. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. Follow us at come and give us some money at oxleybomb.com, and we will see you next week from Barcelona. Can't wait. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to Sam, thanks to Peter. See you then. Bye bye.